So welcome to this episode of Zen Founder. Our topic today is procrastination.
And the subtitle of this episode is how to punch it in the face and get things done. We want to define it. We want to talk about some causes. And then we really want to talk about 5 steps to overcoming it and shipping.
And one thing we don't want you to procrastinate is going to our site, zenfounder.com, signing up for the mailing list.
This is where you can learn about the episodes that we're working on, post comments and give us feedback, and generally engage with the topics that we're talking about in the podcast.
Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about.
Procrastination is the act of delaying or putting off certain tasks or activities. All of us do this to some extent. And for some founders, procrastination is a big problem. It gets in the way of daily productivity, but can contribute to the overall success or lack of success of their app. And procrastination can cause tremendous anxiety when someone is really stuck in that pattern of not being able to get things done.
Most people think of it as being kind of lazy. And the way that we are going to talk about it today is to kind of change the definition a little bit. So the behavior is the same. There's a couple of things or things that are on your list that you are not getting to, that you are waiting until the very last minute. They're just not getting done in a timely manner. But instead of attributing that to laziness or lack of willpower or lack of motivation, a different way to think about procrastination is that it's really very much about feelings. It's about how you feel about the task on your list and your desire to put off tasks that are unpleasant, irritating, stressful, feel like they require too much work.
So you've already defined procrastination and talked about how it's not laziness, but that it's unpleasant feelings that are creeping up. Let's talk about a few causes of it. One of them is difficulty organizing priorities. And so whenever I find myself with this massive list of to-dos, this huge pile of papers, or a big filled inbox, there's clutter, and I don't know what to work on next. So this is like inbox paralysis. I think this is very common, and most people, including founders, don't know quite how to deal with it. And once you figure out a system that can help you get around this organization of your priorities, it can have a major impact on keeping you from procrastinating. Another one that I encounter pretty commonly is excessive distractions. And so people who have the email notifications where either their phone buzzes or they get a little toaster pop-up on their laptop every time someone emails them, text messages coming in, if you have Twitter or Facebook notifications, if you have news popping up, even if you have kids in the house who are coming in every 5 to 10 minutes, this stuff will derail you. It keeps you from getting in the state of flow, and it makes your mind constantly, I call it like constantly on guard for these things, and your mind doesn't allow you to get deep into any task that you're working on. And I find that over time, I've worked in a couple pretty distractive environments, and I found that over time, I actually became adapted to it. And I kind of struggled with over that time just being able to focus at all. Even when the distraction would stop for a few hours, my mind was still in this racing, jotting around, you know, looking for the next kind of fix, the next little thing to do. And it took me a few weeks after I got out of that distracted environment before my mind kind of reset itself and said, okay, you can actually do one thing for 2 hours and not bounce around. So this is another one that you may not even be aware that the distractions are hurting you, and most people aren't. But I think the number is like around 5% of people can actually multitask, and the other 95% of us just think we can. And so this is a big one that you have to get over.
So people who procrastinate are often responding to how they feel about the task. Some of the research on this area in the psychological community has looked at the way that people feel about the tasks that they're putting off. We do have negative feelings or negative reactions to the things that we're most likely to procrastinate. Something about it where we just don't want to do it. It might be irritating. It might be stressful. We're not really aware of how those negative feelings are affecting us, and we're giving in to them. So a lot of procrastination is really based on the emotions that we have about the task. The other really nasty thing about procrastination is that it begins this kind of emotional cycle where you're procrastinating something because you don't like how you feel about it. You're attempting to cope with negative feelings about the task. But then procrastinating also, for most of us, causes more negative feelings. You feel more anxiety. You may start to feel bad about yourself. You might start to tell yourself some things like, oh, I'm lazy. I got to get this done. There's a lot of negative self-talk that goes into procrastination, which then further makes you feel negative about the task that is causing all of this drama for you. So it becomes this cycle, and it can be pretty difficult to break out of it, especially once you start to translate those negative feelings into things like shame or deep self-criticism, where you kind of identify yourself as somebody who has a procrastination problem, and now there's more spiraling downward.
Yeah, I've felt every one of the emotions you were just saying, right? And I've gone through that. It becomes an identity for a short period of time, hopefully a short period of time. I guess you could hang on to it for months, which would be a bad thing, but I'll go through days or weeks where I'm just like, yeah, you know what? I'm just not really productive. And you kind of start owning that, and that's not good. I think another thing that can kind of kick you into that procrastination cycle and get it started is this fear of shipping, which is huge among anybody who's doing anything creative. And this isn't just founders. This is artists. This is musicians. This is programmers. This is designers. There's this internal fear that you may not even be aware of. And it's this fear of public criticism, of nobody noticing. You know, if you spend 6 months building something and you launch it and nobody cares, nobody notices, you don't have to face the piper until you actually ship, right? So if you perpetually push shipping off, then you never have to face that moment of reckoning, you know, where you actually have to be in front of people and see if your thing succeeds. So you may or may not actually be aware of this. And that's where it's like nasty, is that if you're not aware of it, then it's this underlying anxiety, and it will keep you from moving forward day to day and keep you from making progress. And so if you can identify that and then figure out, you know, we're going to talk about 5 steps to shipping. If you can use one or more of these steps to kind of combat that, it can be really helpful for getting around procrastination and frankly, just getting things done and getting closer to shipping every day.
So we're going to talk about 5 things that you can do to, as Rob says, punch procrastination in the face.
So the first step is quite simple. It's simply to be kind. When you realize that there is a task on your list that is causing some trouble, or it keeps getting pushed down to the bottom of the pile and bottom of the pile, rather than increase the negative feelings, make a conscious effort to just sort of be kind to yourself about that task. Realize that there's something about it that you don't want to do. And procrastination is your attempt to cope with how you feel about getting that thing done. We talk about this in the psychological world as emotion-focused coping rather than problem-focused coping. So procrastination is an emotion-focused coping technique. You are doing something, or in this case, not doing something, in an attempt to feel better about this problem that you have. But you're focused on the feelings, not on the actual problem. So shifting from that emotion-focused driven behavior to that problem-focused driven behavior is an important transition to make when you are finding yourself procrastinating. Overall, people who procrastinate are less compassionate towards themselves. They are more critical. They have more negative self-talk. And all of that, as I mentioned earlier, contributes to this cycle of more and more procrastination. So simply letting it not be that big of a deal that you haven't gotten that done yet. Simply honoring that, wow, I'm feeling irritated about this. I'm dreading this. I'm worried about this. And therefore, I'm not doing it. Letting those feelings be there without more self-criticism, without turning that into negative beliefs about yourself. Just acknowledging it, but then transitioning from the emotion-focused place to that problem-focused, more active coping strategy that helps you actually get things done.
Does that mean that you're like ignoring or you're shutting down emotions? Or and I guess, what is problem focus? Does that mean you're focusing on the task at hand?
It does mean you're focusing on the task at hand.
Got it.
And the thing about emotions is first you have to acknowledge them. You have to acknowledge that this is what's driving this behavior. So you're not shutting them down. You're acknowledging them, sort of giving them their day in your mind, then moving into the place of being active and moving towards solving that problem or doing that task.
Got it. So I would, in my own head, I would say this is like knowing yourself, or at least knowing the emotion you're feeling and being able to identify that, and then just focusing on the actual task, like kind of using that information as a way to understand that that's really what's causing you not to do it. And now that you're aware of it, you can get over it.
Yes. And in addition to that, really consciously steering yourself away from any additional self-criticism or negative feelings about the fact that you have not completed this task, about the procrastination.
Yeah, everything's fun and games until these pesky emotions get involved. So I want to talk about, well, I think we should talk next. We have these five steps to shipping, and I think the second step is just to brute force. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but it's kind of how I think about it. It's once you've identified this emotion and you want to focus on the problem, there are these tactics, and these are the ones that I've used. I don't use them all the time. I only use them when I find myself having trouble getting things done. And I've recommended them to a bunch of people when I talk to founders or when I talk to, frankly, anyone who's having trouble getting things done. These are the kind of things that we talk about. And it's a tool belt, right? So you can use any one of these tactics. It may work for you. It may not. It may work for you, you know, at a given time to get through procrastination, or it may not. But let's dive into maybe some practical things.
And I know you have lots of specific tools you're going to talk about, but if we could name the belt, I think the belt would be called emotion regulation. It's kind of how you deal with your feelings, how you figure out how to talk yourself through them, calm them down so that you can actually use some of these specific strategies.
So the tactic that I want to talk about, and I've used this to produce enormous quantities of, you know, of content or of just productivity, I call it the binge. And it's to basically try to escape whatever pattern that you're in. So if you work in an office, go work at a coffee shop, or go work at home. If you work at home, go work at an office, or go work at a coffee shop, or even just get out of town and go to the coast and do kind of a working retreat. It's about changing your location and mixing things up. It's also about removing distractions. Like we said before, this excessive distraction, these email notifications, text messages, Twitter, Facebook, Hacker News, all this stuff, get it out. If you need to use a blocker that keeps you offline for 3 or 4 hours at a time, then do that. If you have the willpower, then do that. But shut off all notifications. You need to go into the zone. I also find music. I loop the same song over and over. Now that may or may not work for you, but find a Pandora station or some kind of music track that you can listen to for several hours to get your mind into the zone. I typically pick a song that I'm really excited about. I'll loop it hundreds of times in a row, and that will then become my trigger to instantly put me into flow state.
Do remember to turn that off when you get home, though, by the way.
Yeah, because I do that at home, and then the wife and kids get really irritated with me.
Like, I cannot listen to Owl City's song "Hello Seattle." I can never listen to that song again.
It was a good flow state. But what's funny is I burned it out, and you burn these songs out if you do this. I will loop a song. I've looped some Lord Huron songs, some Slick Shoes, some Owl City, over and over, and it'll work for several weeks or a couple months, but then it just does get old eventually and you have to find a new song. But I found that that's an amazing trigger for getting you into the zone pretty quickly.
It's like a Pavlovian response.
It really
you
is.
Suddenly are like looking for your laptop the minute you hear that song, like must work.
That has actually happened where, yeah, it'll come on in the car or on a Pandora station and it's like my quote unquote work song, and I will start thinking about work automatically. It's really interesting. The other thing I do is I use caffeine pretty intentionally, and you can't over-caffeinate. You need to know your limits and all this stuff. I drink it, I'll drink like half a cup in the morning, and about every 3 hours I'll drink half a cup. And if you're really trying to focus, now I don't recommend doing this all the time, right? This is not something that I do, but if I am procrastinating, caffeine will get you to focus. I mean, it is a drug and it does help your mind focus on things. So, you know, I'm not your doctor. You may want to consult one before you do this, but certainly having a cup of coffee is a good way to get over something if you're really dealing with procrastination. And then the last two parts of this kind of binge thing that have worked really well for me is to power through and do a couple 12 plus hour days without email. Shut everything off And this works best if you can get out of the house and get, like I did, I went to the coast 1 week and my son was at summer camps and I was basically working 12 to 13, 14 hour days. And you just get momentum. And if you're doing all these other things where you remove the distractions, you drink a little bit of caffeine, you're listening to music, and you're in a new environment, especially, you can literally produce weeks worth of content or code or thoughts or whatever it is that you're working on in a handful of really long days. Again, this is not a sustainable practice, right? You don't want to work like this all the time. You'll burn yourself out. But for me, it's been an amazing motivator to do this and to switch things up if I'm in this negative pattern of procrastination and not getting things done. And it will kickstart me. And then I can return to normal work life and work, you know, 6 or 7 hour days like I typically do and feel good about what I've done. And it actually gets me out of the pattern of procrastination. And then the last tactic that I've seen used pretty well is to change locations multiple times per day, is to actually plan out 2 or 3 hour work sprints, have a little coffee, get some music going, and plan to be at home for 2 to 3 hours, be at a specific coffee shop for 2 to 3, and then maybe at a co-working space. Changing your location changes the way that you view problems. Your environment impacts the way that you work. So those have kind of combined into what I call the binge approach, and it's kind of just powering through.
I think another powering through strategy that you might put on your list there is maybe more for tasks that are smaller, which is simply to put it number one on your morning agenda. And just start the day with it. I have a thing, I'm just not good at filling out paperwork. And I know that if I have to fill out a form or an application or something for whether it's from my business or the kids, I have to do it at the beginning of the day. And I just have to do it first.
I think that's a really good point. Because otherwise, especially if it's something you don't want to do, you're just going to push it off all day. At every decision point, you're going to decide not to do it. So you just have to face it without decision and put it right at the top of your to-do list and not let yourself skip it. So there's three other tactics I want to throw out for kind of brute force getting through procrastination and getting out of a negative cycle like this. One is the Pomodoro technique. Pomodoro, it's Italian for tomato, I'm pretty sure. And the reason this tactic started was people originally used this tomato timer. It was like I think it was an egg timer, but it was made out of tomato. It like looked like a plastic tomato or something. Bottom line is the tactic is you do a 25-minute sprint and a 5-minute break. And so you set this timer for 25 minutes. And now, of course, you can go to like PomodoroTechnique.com or just Google Pomodoro timer. And there's a bazillion of them there. They're for iPhones and iPads and online. And you shut everything out for 25 minutes and you sprint. And you will take a task that may be two hours long or 90 minutes long. And you try to force it into 25 minutes and you just go like gangbusters. And then when the timer goes, you stop, you stand up, you stretch, you get a drink of water, use the restroom. And you take that 5 minutes to relax and reset your mind, and then you do another 25 minutes. And it's tough to Pomodoro all day. It's more like a couple hour thing you can do. But if you literally use it as a motivator in a game, it can be a nice way to get into productivity. Is there research to back up what that does, or do you have any thoughts on that of, you know, the effectiveness of why that works so well?
The literature is not perfectly clear on this, but it looks like the range of adult attention span is, some say it's about 10 minutes for really focused attention. Some studies say that we can sustain attention for up to 40 minutes at a time. So it depends on the task that you're doing and your motivation to do that task. So 20 minutes is a nice middle point, and especially for a task that maybe has kind of limited intrinsic motivation, it's not innately fun or satisfying. 20 minutes is a good expectation for how long you can really focus on something that you have to get done, but don't necessarily want to do.
So it seems like this is just a way to kind of make it official and to like motivate yourself for that time and then give your mind the break, right? Instead of just trying to sit there and focus for 3 hours straight.
Right. When you think you're focusing for 3 hours straight, you're really not. And there's a lot of wasted mental energy and you're not functioning at the optimal level of focus and attention at that point.
Right. And the other one is to time box. And you're actually pretty good at this. I learned this from you, and I don't use this so much, but I know it's worked really well for several people that I've talked to. And in fact, there's a friend right now, a colleague who's struggling with productivity. And I told her this idea, and she loved it. And so every day, I see in her calendar, it's like hour by hour or 30 minute by 30 minute, she literally blocks out what she's going to do. And so she has email from like 11 to 12 and she has a 30 minute lunch. And then she'll have like, do this task for this client is 9 to 10 and literally maps out the entire day. So there's nothing is left to chance. There's no choice. You just go in and you hammer on these things for this full hour. And, you know, she finds it effective. And I think it works for some people as well. And I think it works for a lot of folks if this is the kind of way that your mind works.
You know that every hour of your day, you're supposed to be doing something.
And I think the last technique is really to find some accountability. It's to, if you are really struggling, it's to find a colleague or, you know, a friend or a spouse or a significant other, someone that you can meet with 5 minutes at the beginning of every day. In software development circles, we call this a stand-up meeting, typically because you want to stand up. You don't want to sit during this meeting because you want it to be uncomfortable. You want it to be very short. And you basically just want to say, here's what I did yesterday. Here's what I plan to do today. And, you know, here's why I didn't get everything done that I wanted to do yesterday. And just the fact that you have to tell someone about that every morning will make you think during the day. If you start to procrastinate, you start to not get your tasks done, it will make you reconsider that. Because even if the other person is not being hard on you, it's difficult to go in and tell someone to their face like, yesterday I committed to this and I just didn't get this done because I screwed around. It's embarrassing. And so having even just a tiny bit of daily accountability works. I know a lot of people who do this. I'm actually an accountability partner for someone right now who's trying to kind of get back on track. This really works.
I think it also keeps you out of your own head. Once you start to feel really, really bad about the procrastination or lack of productivity that you're experiencing, you can just sort of stay in that dark tunnel in your own head. So being able to talk about it with someone else, even for 2 or 3 minutes a day, I think is helpful. And it also provides some encouragement. It's not just about having to sort of shame yourself when you weren't successful, but you can sort of celebrate the successes as well. The next strategies or step for shipping is to know yourself. Figure out where you're wasting time. Is it spending time on Hacker News or endless amount of time scrolling through Twitter? Are you giving more time and attention to your email? And recognize what keeps you coming back into the endless loop. Recognize what's pulling you into those tasks and away from real productivity. And I think part of that is figuring out what is the emotion connected to the task that you're avoiding. What's scaring you? If it's a blog post that you are avoiding, are you scared of criticism? Or are you scared of nobody reading it or nobody caring? If it's a marketing push, are you scared of losing money or time? What is the feeling that's attached to the thing that is not getting done? And if an inability to ship or if procrastination is a pattern for you, be curious about why. Try to observe the point in the process where you get snagged. Is it lack of confidence? Is it fear of success? Is it the sense in which you feel like you're going to spend a bunch of time in it and it won't work out well?
You know, knowing yourself is such a big deal in so many ways. Like in terms of productivity, in terms of knowing what your crutches are, and in terms of being aware of your typical patterns, until you've discovered those and until you've kind of internalized them and you know how it is that you procrastinate and frankly what your fears are and how it is that you avoid anything, you know, whether it is that blog post or the marketing push or whether it's, you know, getting on the phone. I personally know that I hate to be on the phone. I just don't like it. So I will literally procrastinate on like making a basic phone call that's not even a hard phone call, but like, you know, I had to order some catering yesterday for our company Christmas party. And I literally put that off because I don't like the phone. And it's a weird thing, but I know that about myself. And so I forced myself to hammer through that. And it's a big deal to be aware of these things and to not let them kind of creep up on you.
And learning how to see those patterns, learning about yourself, takes this detached objectivity that you do have to get out of the shame cycle to just simply observe, why is this happening in my week? Or why is there this specific set of tasks that I continue to procrastinate on or continue to not finish? And that's part of shifting from this like emotion-driven behavior to simply stepping back and being curious, like, why is it this particular thing? And if you can't answer why, then that's not a big deal. But just know that that's the pattern. That's the thing. And that always needs to come at the beginning of your day, or you need to set aside time or use some of these other strategies that we've been talking about.
Our fourth strategy is to take inventory. This is another practical one. It's to look at the tasks on your list that you keep skipping over, then that have been at the top of your list for days or weeks. And you either skip over or you keep reprioritizing. And the first thing I guess I'll say is you should have a to-do list. We didn't even cover that, but it's like if you have this pile of email and this pile of papers and whatever else that's cluttering, you need to find a way to get all that into one place. And for me, that's I use Gmail and I use Trello. And so Trello winds up being my task list. And I try to get everything out of Gmail. I'm not totally inbox zero, but I typically am below about 10 emails in my inbox. And I try not to use that as a to-do list. You don't have to use Trello, though. I used to use paper and pen. That works just fine. There's other systems for it. Figure out a way that where you actually have a to-do list. And every time you finish a task, you don't have to go searching for your next task, because that's a way to derail you for 20 or 30 minutes. It's a way to let your lizard brain sneak in and just wander. So have that to-do list so that there's no decision point from one task to the next. You just know what, once you have that to-do list, I have three D's that I use whenever I'm going through my task list. And it's to do it, delegate it, or delete it. Okay, so doing it is you power through it, right? In the morning when I go through my inbox, I do anything that's less than about 3 or 4 minutes. And if it's a reply or if it's a quick task, if it's paying a bill or something and I can do it quickly, I do it. Otherwise, I transfer it to my to-do list for later prioritization. If I'm already in my to-do list and I'm working, then that's when, and things are already prioritized, that's when I will spend 30, 40, 50 minutes doing a task, or even longer, whatever it takes. Like if it's the next thing in priority, if it's setting up ad campaigns and getting banners made, I will spend several hours doing it because that's the next priority. And even though it's painful and it might take a long time, I don't skip over it. So that's doing it, just powering through. Delegating it is if I come across a task, every time I ask myself, should I do it? Or should I delegate it or delete it, right? And so delegating it is obviously handing it off to a virtual assistant or designer, or developer, someone else you're working with. And that, of course, buys you instant time, especially if the task is several hours long. If you have someone you can delegate it to, that's great. And then deleting it is reevaluating, does this actually need to get done? And what I'll find is if there are tasks that have constantly been in lower priority and keep getting moved down and I don't get to them for several weeks, oftentimes, once I get to them, it's actually not relevant anymore. And I don't actually need to reply to some email that, you know, it's just been 3 or 4 weeks. I'm just going to let it go. So those are the three kind of steps that I look at. I think the one thing I'd say is be aware of delegation paralysis, which is where you want to delegate everything. And you basically spend all your time trying to hire people or trying to find people to do it, because you can spend hours doing that and actually not get anything done. That's if you swing too far in one direction. Swinging too far in the other direction is not delegating anything and doing all the grunt work yourself, right? And so it's finding this balance and knowing where you typically stand.
I like these three D's. That's a great strategy. One of the little rules that I use that's helpful for me is the Ohio rule. Ohio is an acronym for only handle it once. The minute you decide to engage the task, see it through. Only handle it once. Don't get halfway and come back to it. And if it needs a big chunk of time, then I use my time box strategy and stick it on my calendar. I need 4 hours for this.
I think this is especially important when you're in your inbox, because we all have this bad habit of going into your inbox, looking through your emails, and kind of opening an email and reading it and thinking about it for 30 seconds and being like, well, this is hard to reply to. So then, all right, mark it as unread. And you do that and you'll bounce through 10 or 20 emails. That is terrible. If it's a quick reply, reply, be done. If it's a long reply and it is going to take 30 minutes to draft a reply, then I actually hit the F key, which forwards it, and I type in Trello and I forward it to my Trello board, and now that's a task. And true, I will handle that email twice because I had to skim through it the first time to evaluate the length of the task, but I don't count that because it's a prioritization.
It's triage.
Exactly.
So the last step the last strategy that we wanted to talk about is a little less practical, a little more esoteric, I guess, but it's to really consider your future self. I recently read an article on Vox.com where Susanna Locke interviewed a procrastination expert, psychologist Tim Seichel, I think is how you pronounce his name. And he talked about a new area of research that's thinking about procrastination as a problem in conceptualizing your future self. That when you're procrastinating, you're trading your ultimate goal for momentary positive feelings or momentary alleviation of negative feelings. It's giving in to feel good now, but not really considering what's good for you in the long run. Folks who tend to be pretty good at being proactive and managing tasks well have a clear or a strong ability to visualize their future selves. They can sort of get in their own mind a week, a year, 10 years down the road and realize that the thing that they're doing right now or the thing that's on their list and in front of them right now is going to be beneficial in the long run. So when you're procrastinating, the present self is trumping the future self. But when you are effectively engaging in the bigger picture, when you are able or when you can practice, and this is something that can be learned, really thinking about your life and your tasks in the context of who you're going to be in the future, you know, we see what we're trading up for. We see what we're wanting in the long run. When we see ourselves in the future or think about that, we have a better picture of the fact that we're only hurting ourselves by procrastinating. And we have just more to gain by getting our work done so that our future self will be happy. So I guess the take home from that is this idea of not sacrificing your future self, not throwing him or her under the bus because your current self is having kind of a three-year-old, I don't want to moment. Does that make sense? Too much psychobabble?
No, it makes sense. I don't know. I was trying to think if I'm the type of person who merges present and future self pretty well, because I think a lot about the future, but I don't know that I've ever thought of myself as someone who like manages present and future self as overlapping or anything.
I know they're kind of weird terms, and I don't think most of us sort of sit down and think, like, project ourselves forward.
Right.
But I think it's more about keeping the big picture in mind and realizing that this task on your list, if it doesn't get done, you're screwing yourself later. And the valuing or being able to imagine your future self is like deciding, oh, I'm not going to screw that guy. I'm not going to make life harder later by avoiding this now.
Yeah, I think it's realizing that, you know, I'm a founder and I'm going to have to do tough things. And if I don't do this one, I'm never going to get to that goal. And if the answer is, well, I don't need to do this one to get to that goal, then you shouldn't be doing it. You should be delegating or deleting it. So I think in summary, you know, we define procrastination. We know that everyone deals with it at least once in a while, some of us more than others. We talked about the causes. And then we talked about 5 steps to shipping. Step 1 was to be kind to yourself. Step 2 was to use some brute force tactics, like Pomodoro and time boxing and binging. Step 3 was knowing yourself. And step 4 was take inventory. Step 5 was to consider your future self. And we'll link up Tim Seichel's book from 2013. It's called Solving the Procrastination Puzzle, A Concise Guide to Strategies for Change. We'll link that up in the show notes. Head over to zenfounder.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'll have a contact form where you can ask us questions. And you should definitely sign up for our mailing list because we're going to be talking about some interesting things and keeping you up to date.
Until next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.